This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the TrackHawk Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. I know we've been tardy on the past couple of weeks. I apologize about that. We'll get better next week. Trust me on that one. Not as busy as the shows we've been used to the past couple of days. The driver announcements have kind of laid back a little bit, so Charlie and I get to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the sport. After this news and notes segment, we've got Rob Rabman coming up. He is one of the drivers who will be contending for in the Atlantic Championship for next year. And Charlie, he's not running Atlantic. He's running a Pro Formula Mazda with the same layout you ran when you ran a then Star Mazda.
Oh, with the aluminum wings?
Yes.
Ooh, old school.
Old school, yeah. But I think he's... There's more in the interview to find out how he's running, so definitely stay tuned for that. We have some other neat things coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Definitely stay tuned to our Twitter and our Facebook pages. We will let you know what happens there. So InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com is how you get a hold of us. Also, as I said, Facebook and Twitter, you can find us at Inside Open Wheel. Leave us a voicemail, Google Voice, 815-714-9260. So this weekend is... the Super Tour over at Buttonwillow for SCCA, so we'll have results for that next week. Brian Belansky is going to be joining us. He's actually there right now. Not going to bug him on that. But we do have some other news coming out of the world of open wheel racing as I pull up my handy dandy. Oh, where the heck did that go? Don't you love when you pull something up and then all of a sudden it just disappears? Oh, there we go. All right, so it was announced this week. There were several announcements this week, and most of them had to do with FIA. So Emily Linscott's the first Pirelli Holdings Powering Diversity Scholarship winner. She's going to be going to Kiwi Motorsport. Also, Ernie Francis Jr. from Trans Am is going to be running in... he's going to be running in FR Americas. Has not announced a team yet. He's going to be running the number 98, but we're waiting to see if we can interview him. He will be on our show at some point. I did sit down and talk to Willie T. Ribbs with him. You'll hear that. You'll hear part of that in the interview. Willie T. is going to be, basically be his mentor. He's going to coach him through open wheel racing. If there's anybody who I think is capable of doing that, it's Willie T, because he's one of the few who have come from Trans Am into IndyCar. And it was a great interview, and he's doing okay. He and his family are fine. They are suffering with the rolling blackouts in Texas, if you have been following the news, obviously. But a lot of people really suffering hard in Texas. If you're listening and you're one of those, our thoughts are with you. Hopefully, with the 50s and 60s moving into your area, you can get rid of the snow, and we're going to be next getting rid of the snow. I mean, how many inches did you guys get, Charlie?
We got, like, I think 7 around there. Less than a foot, but, like, substantial amount.
We have, in the past 3 weeks here in the Chicagoland area, got anywhere from 20 to 30 inches of snow on the ground.
Ooh.
Yeah, so winter's coming in 3 weeks.
It's been a good year for snow.
As I told my dad, I'm ready to ride outside. I'm sick and tired of riding indoors. But now that I have my studio, I can ride indoors again. Yay. also making some...
Does that mean that you can also do some driving indoors?
You know what? If anybody wants to sponsor my iRacing team, insideopenwheel@gmail.com. I should say my iRacing addiction. Also making news, iCar, the Circuit iCar in Mirabel, Quebec. Those who don't know, basically it is it's a racetrack that is built on a ramp. Tarmac, for those who don't have the lingo, it's called a ramp, where it's going to be the ramp of the Montreal Mirabel Airport, and NASCAR Canada's race there, Porsche GT3 Cup Canada's race there. They've had some races, but now they're going to have their first two-car team. Both drivers are Canadian. As we pull up the article from F4 U.S. Championship, the drivers, Justin Arsenault and Lucas St. John, are the two drivers They're coming from karting, and it's going to be their first year. They're 15 years old, and it's going to be their first season in what we call big cars. They will have their first practice on March 8th and 9th at Virginia in preparation for the first round, which will be held at the Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, March 25th through 28th. Goes on another one of your rants, doesn't it?
I'm still stuck on your explanation of ramp and tarmac.
Oh, come on. You should know this. Didn't you at one time hold a pilot's license?
I haven't seen my logbook in a while, but I think I have like 20 some hours in a 172. Oh. No, I know what a ramp is.
Oh, I was going to say.
But I didn't, I'm looking at the map now. I didn't know that ICAR was on an airport.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it's interesting, the different layouts that they have had. Pitt Road actually used to be off of what is now turn 2-3, I think it is. That's straightaway there between 2 and 3. So I don't think they've held any major Canadian races in the past couple of years by looking at their layout. But they also have a drag strip on the back straightaway, too.
Yes, they do.
So, yeah.
You know what I've realized by when I have free time, which I have a lot of, especially in the last year, but even before that, is that a lot of racetracks are very close to either large bodies of open water or airports or both.
Yes. Yeah. How else are you going to travel people or goods, you know, to a racetrack?
What's that?
How else are you going to travel people or goods to a racetrack?
Well, no, I mean, like, not near, like, I mean, like, a city is near an airport, but it's not like, racetracks are, like, right next to the airport. And I mean, some of them evolved that way, like, Silverstone was built on an airport, Sebring was built on an airport, like, okay, but also, like, if you think about it, an airport and a racetrack kind of have the same demands. Large, open spaces, they're very loud, so you kind of want to set them away from population areas. And so I guess, yeah, it makes sense to put racetracks and airports together.
No, it's a great idea. And this is why we should be back at, Cleveland.
That also just because it's a great circuit.
Oh, it's a fantastic circuit.
Has a lot of history, but I guess also, I mean, there's a lot of IndyCar races around the Great Lakes area. So do we really need one more? I think we do.
Just yes. Yes, it is a fantastic circuit. I did see a rumor online, maybe, and you can check this out. We'll talk about it in our next segment after the feature interview. Supposedly, Cleveland's shutting down Burke Lake for an airport?
No.
Check it out, because I'm kind of curious at that. Also, we do have our driver listings. Yay! For D-Force Racing in, where is this, F4, Jose Andres Martinez is going to be running with them full season. Dylan Tavella going to run in FRA, and I do believe that is a partial deal. Right now, that's Road Atlanta for now. And I did hear about an interesting driver that was testing for TJ Speed. Okay, remember a couple weeks ago, Charlie, we said we knew the two drivers who were for TJ Speed, but we weren't sure the third one, okay? Mm-hmm. Does the name Kylen Braun ring a bell?
Faintly.
Okay. For those who are wondering why I'm bringing that name up, Kylen Braun, son of Jeff Braun, famous sports car engineer. He came up the ranks to sports cars, ran in now the Xfinity Series, and came back and ran with John Bennett in sports cars. Decided to give one of TJ Speed's FR America's cars a try. Whether it was for a coaching opportunity or if an actual race situation, it's tough to tell. But it's going to be interesting to see if that comes to fruition. I'm hearing of a couple more signings that are unofficial, but could be official in the next couple of weeks, especially in FRA. As we move, there was a new team somewhere. Where was that? No, it was an EP4. Someone had a new team. ICAR, that's what it was. But there was also some interesting F4 combinations at Sebring for the Academy. We'll talk about the Academy a little bit later on as well. But I did find out that Nikita Johnson, Jimmy Lockhart were in Dan Mitchell's VRD teams, and I did talk to him about that. He said the drivers weren't eligible for F4, so I wouldn't be surprised if Dan Mitchell goes to EP4 with those two drivers. You also had Sarah Fisher has a team now in F4. Elliot Cox was that driver all throughout the Academy. Ganella Racing had Artie Flores and Matt Clark in there. DC Autosport running three cars with Christian Weir, Rodrigo Gutierrez, and Jace Denmark-Gessel. And Jay Howard had Joe Ost... I practiced this name, and I knew I was going to screw it up. Joe Osterhoff in one of their cars. What's up?
Osterhoff?
That's probably it's one of those good old middle European names you chew on for a little bit and spit out. I should know because my mom's family is mostly German. You know, the Holmans and the Zimmermans and just that thick name that you got to chew on a little to soften it up and just spit it right out.
I haven't actually seen it written down, so I'm just going off of your pronunciation.
Yeah. Also in F4. Here's another one. Arias Duke Medigian joins Kiwi Motorsport. I'm going to put this in the chat right now, Charlie, so you could see how it's pronounced. I think I screwed it up. So a little background. Charlie and I use Discord for our chats, for our segments. And personally, I think it's better than Skype.
Yes.
I love it.
Well, we haven't tried video chatting with it, but for a lot of things, it's a lot better.
I am getting a Ring camera, a Ring light this week, so we can try that out, and maybe we can put the first segment up on YouTube. Of course, I don't know if people want to see what I look like, because then, you know, our low listenership will probably go down further. All right, so look at what I sent you, and go ahead, try and pronounce it.
I would say Arias Duke Magian.
And this is why he's the driver and not me.
You got it, like DJI kind of blends together. I feel like the J kind of emphasizes the D. Duke Magian.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, our buddy Rob Howden has ranked him the number one Carter in North America. So that's going to be fun to see what he could do in this F4 championship. And from the drivers that I've seen already signed up in the 2021 championship, it's gonna be pretty interesting. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Rob Radman joins us. He'll talk about where he came from and his new deal, which partially puts him in the Atlantic Championship.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
We have three drivers that we know of who are running in FRP this year, two in the F1600 Championship and one in the Atlantic Championship, but he's not running your typical Atlantic. It's Rob Rabin. Rob, thanks for joining us. Let's talk about your decision to hop into the Atlantic Championship for the 2021 season.
Yeah, so this year we're not going to be fielding a true Atlantic, as some may say. We're actually going to be using our 2004 Pro Formula Mazda. That car was run in the Road to Indy series from 2004 to 2017, and they're popping up all over the country as kind of club racing cars. And because they no longer have a true place in the Pro series, all the Pro teams are selling them off for quite a good deal. So we picked one up, and I've been driving that for a year now, and so we're going to be going after some Atlantic races this year.
And have you run any Atlantic races in club racing with it yet? Or has it just been whatever you can run in Midwestern Council with the big formula cars?
Well, so I have won a couple SCCA club races with it. Okay. We were down in Alabama at Barber Motorsports Park last year in August. And I was able to sweep both days, actually. I ended up first overall in the entire big formula / prototype group. So that was pretty exciting. And I do actually have a majors win under my belt too. I won the Saturday race for the Road America Cap Majors. That was a pretty exciting one. That was a fun race. But yeah, we're still going to do some Midwestern Council racing. And obviously I won the championship with Midwestern Council this year in Atlantic in that car. So that was a great experience to be able to race such a high class car against some of these other amazing high caliber cars as well.
I was going to say, because this year, you're not going to have to worry about the Swift 16s. You have to worry about the Swift 14s, the Ralts, all the other Atlantic chassis. But a lot of people are asked, probably listening to this, asking, wait a second, a Pro Formula Mazda in the Atlantic class, and it does work.
Yes, it does. It's not, I hate to say it, it's not going to be the most competitive car out there. Just because we don't have, you know, we don't have tunnels like those big cars do. We don't have the tire size and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, obviously the tires will benefit us at a track like Road America just because of the long straight and less rolling resistance and all of that. We're still down on power. The Pro Mazda is a little heavier than the O14s and the Ralts as well.
Rob Ramon joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. He'll be running a Pro Formula Mazda in the Atlantic Championship under what we are calling, until we find out what it is and further notice, the C2 class. Now, do you have the wing package that was introduced in the mid-2010s, or are you still running the initial wing package, which was, I believe it was aluminum wings for the front and rear?
Yeah, we're still running the original wing package.
Okay.
The car is pretty much in the original 2004 spec besides the oil system. We do have the updated oil system, so it's the external filter and everything, and that's pretty much the only modern update done to the car. Other than that, we're old aero, old suspension package, all of that stuff.
All right, now let's go ahead and talk about how you got here from deciding to run the Pro Formula Atlantic. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But you've had an interesting path to get to where you're at today.
Yeah, so I started racing in a go-kart. That's where most of these open-wheel drivers start. And same with me. I started there. I started racing at Road America Kart Club when I was about 10 years old. I got into the Briggs 206 class. So I started in Sportsman, and I worked my way up to Junior. And I won a couple junior championships, and then I worked my way over to senior. I won a championship in senior, and about then I decided, all right, it's time to get into a real race car. Go-karts can only take you so far. So when I was 14, I got my wheel-to-wheel racing license with Midwestern Council at Blackhawk Farms down in Illinois, and that was in a 1979 Ford Fiesta. So that's a real speed machine, if you know anything about it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. So from there, I just kind of started getting into faster and faster closed wheel cars. And then in 2019, I made the jump into open wheel. So I started in a Formula V and then moved into a Continental, a vintage Continental. So it was a vintage V, then a vintage Continental. And then I kind of took a little step backwards, sort of. I got into a Formula Ford F1600 with Cahill Motorsports. I did a little test down in over at VIR with that car. And then I ran the 2020 Hoosier Super Tour race at Sebring with them as well. And then COVID hit, so we didn't really know what we were going to do next. And we didn't really have the budget to run a full season with Cahill. And we had this Pro Mazda, so we were like, well, hey, why not get some experience in a much faster car? So that's exactly what we did, and it turned out to work in our favor.
Well, it helps to get used to a faster car on some of the tracks we have here in the Midwest. You have Groton, there's Blackhawk, Road America. So you have a healthy mix of courses within the Midwestern Council Championship to where, you know, you can learn how to go high speed with a what you would consider high downforce car for what you're used to driving, and then, you know, slower speeds at a place like Blackhawk.
Exactly, yeah. And this year we didn't just restrict ourselves to Council and SCCA either. We raced a lot with SVRA, the Vintage Racing Association. So we were able to go to places like Mid-Ohio and Circuit of the Americas with them. So that was an amazing experience to get on some of those super well-known tracks.
I was going to say, yeah, and it helps out later on down the road for when you decide to move up, you know, maybe into the Road to Indy or the US FIA Championship. You have that experience. You're not going into a track blind, or you're not going into a track just with sim racing experience.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, talking more about that sim racing experience thing, I don't use it necessarily to learn a car because, yes, the Pro Mazda is in iRacing. The car in iRacing has all the new suspension updates, and we run a different tire and all that stuff, so it's not really the same as our car. I just use iRacing to learn tracks,
right,
and to figure out where we're going. So if I know we're going to a new track in a given year, you know, I'll go on iRacing and spend a couple hours doing that track, hours, maybe even days, learning that track. So I've got that track known like the back of my hand.
Now, let's talk about Midwestern Council for a little bit. Me being here in the Midwest working in motorsports, I know about it. It is, for those who don't know, though, it is a regional, basically a regional SCCA, like you would find in, you know, like a BMW CCA region. But they go to different tracks that you don't normally hear of, except if you're in the Midwest, our Midwestern Legion tracks. So talk to a little bit about Midwestern Council, what it's about, and I believe they also have smaller car clubs as well.
Yeah, so Midwestern Council is an organization made up of, it's either five or six smaller organizations, smaller chapters. So we're members of the Great Lakes Sports Car Club. They're one of the smaller clubs. And each club likes to sponsor an event for the year. So Great Lakes is generally the sponsor of the Milwaukee Mile racing event that Council puts on every year. And that's one of the tracks. That's one of the very unique tracks that Council goes to. We rerun the road course at the Milwaukee Mile, which I don't even know when the last time SCCA did that was, but that's one of the things that makes Council unique. You get to go on some of these less heard of tracks and everything. We also run Blackhawk. That's where we do the driver's school usually. So Council has a wheel to wheel driver's school and a high speed autocross driver's school. They're the ones that I did my wheel to wheel driver's school with when I was 14. They go to some of the bigger tracks too. Road America is one of them. They've gone to, Worldwide Technology Raceway.
Yep, over in Gateway.
Yep, they do that one. I know they've done Groton in the past. I'm not sure when, but yeah, they tend to focus on a wide variety of the Midwestern tracks. We did Gingerman with them a couple years back as well.
Oh, I love Gingerman. That's one of my favorite Midwestern tracks. Actually, as a former race announcer for NASA Great Lakes Midwest, that was always my favorite stop, even though I was 5 minutes from one of the stops and I could sleep in my own bed. But, you know, it's interesting to see drivers talk about their past and, you know, coming from club racing. And I've noticed that some of the ones who race in Midwestern Council, they've got that little gleam in their eye because it's not just the racing within that group. It's the camaraderie in the paddock. And it seems like that series, more than most, has a tight-knit community.
Yes, you are 100% right with that. We've gotten to know an unbelievable amount of people through Midwestern Council. And it's amazing how much they want to help you, too. One of our long, long time friends that we've known ever since my dad was racing, his name is Daryl Wessel. When I did my driver's school, we didn't really know him too much. We knew of him. We knew he was kind of this mythical guru that knew every single track in the Midwest and knew how to drive them perfectly. He came up to us when I was doing my driver's school, and he wasn't my actual instructor, but he was just kind of walking around, and he gave me some of the best tips to drive Blackhawk that I've to this day ever heard. So it's just the people like that that make this organization so amazing.
Let's talk about Formula Atlanta. The Formula Atlantic in the championship you're going to be running in. You're going to run the whole schedule, correct?
Well, it's still up in the air at the moment.
Okay.
Obviously, I would like to run quite a few of those races. A lot of the tracks that they run, I've been to. The only one I haven't been to is Pittsburgh, so that would be quite a new experience. So obviously, I'd want to run that one to get another track under my belt. But yeah, we would like to run as many of those races as we can, time and budget permitting.
Yeah, that's the one thing I know a lot of drivers are saying, well, I want to do this, but you know, budget kind of limiting. But it's interesting to note, too, that FRP has an off weekend for the runoffs at IMS. How stoked are you to possibly have a chance to run across the yard of bricks in your Pro Formula Mazda?
Oh, that would be amazing. So, I don't know if you heard this as well. 2018, we took our vintage Continental down there and ran with SVRA at the Brickyard. And that was such a surreal experience. That was amazing to be able to cross the bricks like that. And we were in, you know, group nine in SVRA. Group nine is the wings and slicks category. So we're out there with F5000 cars and other Atlantics and all sorts of huge Indy Lights cars, Indy cars, everything. that was an amazing experience. And to go back there in a faster car that I think I can be somewhat competitive with, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I've got to make it down there for the runoffs. Runoffs is always one of my favorite events of the year, and I never seem to quite get there when they're down at IMS. All right, Rob, I know that a lot of people are wondering how they can follow your adventures in what some would call a quote-unquote strange car, but really, I think running a Pro Formula Mazda in the Atlantic Championship is pretty advantageous, and I think that it's great to see that somebody's bringing these two rotary engines back, because those are some of the most sexiest sounding cars out there. But how can fans follow your progress throughout the season?
Yeah, so you can go follow me on Instagram at Rob Radman. That's where I do most of my personal posts. You can go follow Radman Racing as well on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. Go follow my personal Facebook page. And we're on pretty much all of the main social media platforms. Either search my name or Radman Racing.
Sounds good. Rob Radman, thanks for joining us, and good luck this season.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we'll have more on the big week in news. Stay tuned.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, the rest of the show, you get random musings of Charlie and Jeremy. Everything you wanted and more. Yay!
I've always been dreaming about the day when people would actually tune in to listen to my opinion.
Well, there may be more of it, depending on what happens. Like I said, we've got a lot of things coming up in the next several weeks. So Charlie and I have been working behind the scenes to make the show, to improve the show, to say the least. Yes, we have lots of interviews, and I try and include Charlie in them out as well. But as we mentioned in the first segment, we're going to start incorporate video so he and I can see each other. And that way, you know, it's kind of like we're sitting next to each other, but we're really not.
So I don't have to awkwardly butt in and talk over you when I try to say something.
Exactly, you know, and that happens. But I've got some things coming in, and because I've got another project that I'm working on that's going to be, it's probably late spring, early summer that will debut. So definitely stay tuned for that. Just a lot of momentum that we're seeing with the show, and we want to try and improve that momentum. So one of the things that we want to start include are listener questions. I've got one for you because a listener sent this to me. Longtime listener.
Are listeners asking me questions?
A listener. This is specifically for you. Isn't that kind of scary?
Ooh.
I know.
A little bit, yeah.
So
you're making my dreams come true, Jeremy.
Well, it only took 13 years. By the way, I got a notification on Facebook. You and Charlie have been friends for 13 years. I'm thinking, damn, I'm old.
Wow, yeah.
It's been at least 13 years. Okay, so here's the question. Do you think that Indy Lights should have a pit stop to change a set of tires during the race to practice race condition pit stops for IndyCar?
Oh, well, we talked about that.
I think I remember that, but I'm like, oh, I'll just pose it anyway.
Yeah, in a perfect world, yes, absolutely. Formula 2 does it. I think they specifically do it because they want to give their drivers pit stop experience. I do think that having your first career pit stop in an IndyCar is not an ideal situation.
No.
But I do recognize that it adds significant expense to an already expensive series that is doing everything they can to keep their budgets as low as possible. So that's sort of my short answer is, well, I don't really know if there's a short answer, but yes, I would like them to see them have pit stops, but I realize that it's not really as easy as just saying, hey, you guys are doing pit stops now.
Yeah, and it would be a great idea, but also you got to remember too, I don't know if they do it with this. I think they still do it with the Dallara IL-15. I got to talk to a couple people about that, but they have a security pin that goes, they drill two holes in the, is that the hub there? Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah.
So they drill them in the hub, they get the wheel nut on, and then they, and then they put the, it's almost like a safety pin. Kind of looks like a safety pin. So that way if.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, I think that that's a pretty small challenge because Dallara makes plenty of other cars that do pit stops, and right. they have some way around the safety pin.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could just probably just copy and paste a solution. I think it's just the torque guns for the wheel nuts that they use.
Those are awesome wrenches. Those are awesome.
Yeah. I'm not going to make the noise, but you know what they are. They're incredibly strong.
Yeah.
And so you just pull the trigger and it tightens it enough.
I think we should get a chief engineer for Indy Lights team and kind of pick their brain on it. That'd be interesting.
Yes, because the other way to tighten a wheel nut is to use a torque wrench. Have you ever seen a torque wrench that they use to tighten like even the Atlantic cars?
I love when they break out those torque wrenches. They're big.
Like, they're like 5 or 6 feet long.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're insane.
And then I take my torque wrench out to torque my lug nuts on my car, and I feel kind of inadequate.
Well, you know, it's not the size of the torque.
Oh, come on now. Family program, come on. But yes.
Low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, very low-hanging fruit. But yeah, that's the answer. If you have any other questions for us, insideopenwheel@gmail.com or @insideopenwheel, always a great time. You can send any time.
Before we move on from this, I think it'd be fun to sort of explore what the extra expenses would be. For implementing pit stops.
Well, here's the thing. You could easily... all you really need... You would just need... Really 5 over-the-wall men. Because you need 1 each tire and then someone to be the jack. Because you can have the dead man on the cold side of the pit.
Do Indy Lights cars have the internal jack system?
I don't remember. I think they do.
I don't know, but I assume that they don't. But I could be wrong.
Okay, so then you would need 6. So you have...
You would need six, or you would need to update the cars.
And see, that's the thing. I don't see them updating the cars until they go to the next generation. So yeah, you would need 6. 2 with the quick jacks, and then 4 with the tires.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you're also doubling the tire budget, or not quite doubling it because of practice tires, but for each race you're using 2 sets of tires rather than 1.
Right, and you'd have to the drop off of the tires. You'd have to essentially have almost like a red compound for both sets of race tires.
Yeah, you would have to develop a new compound because you're something softer to last, you know, half the race rather than all of it.
So meanwhile, we would see faster times, but at the same time, we'd be incurring an extra expense because I would imagine there's like, 4 or 5 crew members, including the chief engineer on an Indy Lights team.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how many crew each car has. I know that it's a common thing for the rig driver to be the fueler.
Yeah, but I don't see a need to refuel, especially if you have 100-mile races.
Right. But I'm just saying that they like people have more than one job on the team. And yeah, I think that's a good point, is that we're not talking about refueling, because that's a whole different thing. I mean, you have to have them, you know, you have fire concerns.
Yeah.
You have those fuel rigs are very expensive, I'm sure.
Regardless, you'd have to give the guys helmets for safety.
Right, exactly. But I mean, you should probably do that too with even with the tire changing pit stops.
Oh, fire suits too.
So that's another expense is equipment for the crew members that are changing tires.
So let's just use a rough number. We just get, you know, we get motorcycle helmets. Okay. Because you're not going to need the fireproof for a non-fueling pit stop. So
right now, but you're going to need to give them like a full suit.
Yeah. So I would say maybe a 1-layer would even be good enough.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about maybe $600 a person. So all right, you multiply $600 times what we say 6. So that's $3,600 for the season for a helmet and full suit.
For equipment.
Yeah, for equipment. All right.
I mean, that's when you're talking about a, you know, $1 million budget, that's not too bad.
No, it's not too bad. But, you know, here's the thing, too. Because Indy Lights shares the pit space with the Indy cars, you know, maybe work something out with a team to where you can use their guns.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
Okay, so they lease the guns for what? $1,000 a season?
Ooh, that I have absolutely no idea what that would go for.
Let's do this. Let's make it a point. I'm going to contact some teams this week. And next week's show, we will have the rough numbers of what it would take to get pit stops in Indy Lights. Because this is a very interesting proposition. So, mm-hmm. I'm going to write this down on a post-it note. Go ahead, sorry.
I think the largest expense would be just doubling the amount of tires used for a race.
Yeah, I think so as well. Pit stops. All right. And all listeners are going like, what the hell's going on? No, I'm literally... So if you take a look at my desk right now, it is like I have... I literally have post-it notes all over. So I have a post-it note from a note that Howden told me to check out. I've got a post-it note for work, post-it note for that, post-it note for our voicemail number. It's like a regular radio station, except I'm working from home.
I'm sitting in my bedroom on my sim racing rig.
There you go. You know, I can't tell you how many drivers do that when they do their interviews.
They're sitting in their sim racing rig.
Yeah, heck, even Nicky Ullman tells me, "Yeah, I'm sitting in my rig."
Yeah, I mean, it's so the way I have it set up is I have a wireless keyboard and mouse, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a nightstand that I got from IKEA, and that's what my mouse is sitting on, and what my right arm is resting on, and then I have my feet up on my pedals, I have my seat reclined, so I'm like in a very relaxed position. I have my wireless keyboard on my lap. And I have the TV right in front of me with my steering wheel, and I have a little fan. I'm sitting next to my bedroom window. I have a nice view out of the window. So it's good for sim racing. It's good for general gaming or anything I want to do on the computer. And it's not so good for any like work because I don't have a writing surface. But anything other than that, it's perfect.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I think it's great, and especially because I think you've got a camera ready for when you when you decide to be a big old Twitch streamer. So there's that.
I've tried Twitch streaming. To be honest, I don't really enjoy it.
That's understandable. It's
because I mean, when I'm playing video games, I play to entertain myself, and to entertain other people while I'm doing it is kind of just it's a burden, and that I don't want to get involved with.
I know it's like being a burden. Kind of next at Inside Open Wheel. Charlie had an idea in between segments, and we'll tell you about it next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
So, to tell you a little bit about the relationship Charlie and I have, it's obviously a close one because we've known each other for so long. Oh, almost almost a decade and a half. So... Between, you know, we shoot ideas at each other constantly, you know, back and forth. You know, we sit and think on it, and we think, oh, you know, it's a horrible idea. We'll tell him that. He'll tell me that or whatnot, or a good idea. You know, we've had some good ideas these past couple months, but Charlie was nailing on something in between a couple of our segments. Go ahead with your idea.
Okay, so like I was telling you earlier, when I'm bored, which is frequent, I sort of indulge in this fantasy that I have of taking the idea.
Okay, Charlie. Street race. Never mind. It's a family show, but continue on.
Oh, that's well.
All right, but continue on about the street race.
So this other fantasy that I have, that is appropriate for family show, is taking the idea of a street race, like you know, Monaco or IndyCar at, you know, Toronto or Long Beach or wherever, and taking that idea and scaling it down, scaling everything down. So scaling down the series from IndyCar down to like FRP, which is what I compete in, then to do that, to sort of go along with that, you scale down the market. So rather than having an IndyCar race at Los Angeles or in Toronto, you have an FRP race at like a smaller market, like a small town in West Virginia or something. Sort of like what they do at Trois-Rivières, which is a relatively small city. They have a street circuit there that's not really big enough for IndyCars, but they have smaller series, like when I raced there with Pro 2000. I think maybe the biggest series they had there, I think they had Indy Lights for a while. But it's, you know, it's too small for a big series.
Well, it used to be...
I like that idea.
It used to be a regular stop on the Atlantic schedule, too.
Sorry, you cut out for a second.
I said it used to be a regular stop on the Atlantic schedule.
Right, exactly.
So.
Yeah, so it's like Atlantics and Lights were the biggest series that they had there. So sometimes when I'm bored, I'll just go onto Google Maps and I'll explore the map and sort of play with the scroll wheel on my mouse and zoom into some whatever small city that I've never heard of or small town and see if I can like pick out a racetrack from the map. And recently I've also been like exploring small airports, because like before we were saying that there's a lot of airports, like airports and racetracks are very similar, and obviously it's not an original idea to put a racetrack in an airport. As we were sort of shooting the breeze between segments, I was doing that and I happened to zoom into what is this town called, Hickory, North Carolina, which it looks like it's just north of Charlotte.
Okay.
And so I was just like, there's a railroad track, so that's maybe not such a good thing. But, you know, if Champ cars can run over railroad tracks and Indy cars can run over railroad tracks, I think my softer Formula 4 can handle it. I mean, while we were talking, I was just sort of looking, and there might be some potential here. Because it's I've learned from this experience, it's harder than you think to just sort of zoom into a place and pick out a racetrack. Because there's a whole bunch of different things that you have to think about. Like, you have to find a place for the paddock. There has to be enough runoff in certain places. Like, you can't have a really long straightaway going right into a building. You can't really have it in a residential area because people need to get to and from their houses. So there's a lot of practical stuff, and it's easy to criticize, like when they announce a new street circuit. But there's a lot of stuff that goes into the thinking about it and the restrictions on what you can do with the design.
No, it makes sense. Cause you were talking about this too, and it reminded me there were two street races in the Midwest that held what we call the support series. There was the West Michigan Grand Prix in Grand Rapids that ran for 2 years. That was more namely known as the Scott Brayton Memorial Street Circuit. They had Trans Am, World Challenge, Barber Dodge, Spec Racer Ford, and the 1 year the Kellogg Ford Vintage Grand Prix race. So they ran the streets there. St. Petersburg used to be a support series street race. Instead of going left there at turn 10, they went right and followed it around and caught back up with the circuit. So there was that. Des Moines had a race on the streets. So it's not unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it would be, especially since, I was reading the other day that NASCAR is looking at more road and street, especially with the updates for next year's car, where it's basically like an American version of a V8 Super.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That would be
kind of what NASCAR is trending towards. So yeah. People are like, well, if they're getting rid of the 1930s suspension and updating the cars, maybe they're doing more road and street circuits. And if you had told me 15 years ago that NASCAR is getting away from ovals, I'd be like, nah, you're crazy. But that seems like it's where it's going. So street circuits can make a comeback, and I am here for it.
Yeah, I would love to see street circuits make a comeback, because I tell you what, I'm so glad I got a chance to go up to Toronto and see. Unfortunately, I was up there after they decided to move the pit lane, but I still got a chance to go to Toronto and see the course. Detroit is it's a beautiful facility for a street course. I can say that much. Yeah, I would love to see a resurgence in street racing here in the United States, even airport racing.
Mm-hmm. And actually, since you mentioned that, I was looking at the area around Hickory. There's a Hickory Regional Airport.
Uh-huh.
It's got two runways that sort of make an X. And I bet if I spend some time looking at this, I can make a really nice circuit out of it.
You know what? And I kind of chuckled at that, too, because Hickory is home of Hickory Speedway, where a lot of the NASCAR drivers cut their teeth.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. So it would be... Let me see here. So I think, you know, not only could you have F4 and FR there, but you could probably have, you know, the, what is it? It's the ARCA Menards E Series. So you could have that. Maybe have a Spec Miata race. Oh, that would be fun, a Spec Miata race. Oh, yeah. I mean, the possibilities are endless. And I think it's a great idea. Tony Perella, if you're listening, you can kind of email us with working on that, because I'd love to see that. I would love to see that happen. That would be so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would love to take my Formula Ford out on a street circuit, and especially one that I sort of was the catalyst of the idea for.
And still get run over by young punks.
What's that?
I said, and still get run over by young punks.
Well, they would be out in front of me, so I'd start behind them. So I don't know if that counts as getting run over by them. But...
yeah, I think it'd be cool.
Cool. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, no. So definitely. Hopefully, SCCA Pro is listening to this too and can figure that out. I can't remember if I said something last week, but. We have initial.
I'm sure you said a lot of things.
I've said a lot of things that I don't remember. Ask my wife on that one. We've heard that Greenlight is going to be the streaming partner for F4 FR Americas. We don't know specifics yet. All we know is that it's there. So when we get more information, we'll pass that along. Road to Indy is still going with their cameras and Rob Howden. We're still waiting on what the heck's going on with FRP. We only know a schedule right now, but this season, I think more than any, I hope that some of these partners decide, you know, because we've got Braille batteries. Those are decades old technology. You can easily put another small battery on your car, but how many owners want to do that? I hope we get to the point, Charlie, that we can start streaming video from different cars to supplement the streaming services that we see out there now.
Yeah. I mean, I've sort of started experimenting with that.
Right.
I don't really think it's all that difficult. I know you and I have talked about it a lot. I think the most difficult thing is dealing with internet connections sort of out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and a lot of the racetracks or some of these series run are in the middle of nowhere. But we're seeing now with new 5G technology and Starlink. I just got an email the other day that Starlink is going to be available here shortly. It's going to make things a lot easier to do streaming like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's good to try to sort of put yourself in a position to take advantage of that when it happens.
Yeah. So I think if anyone's interested in trying it, let me know, because I'd love to give it a shot. I'm looking at you, Formula Race Promotions drivers. So,
hey, I would need this pandemic to be over and I'll get right on it.
I know you will, but I'm saying some of the other front runners. So we have a mix of drivers in there. But nonetheless, there's just a lot that needs to happen for that to happen. And a lot of it also is working with these series. And then if they have broadcast partners, working with their broadcast partners, that's one of the big things. Also real quick, FormulaScout.com. It is a great blog site. If you have a chance, they're not even paying me for this, but I'm still saying it's a fantastic blog site. To head over there, check it out. Earlier this week, they wrote an article, Indy Pro 2000 runner-up Rasmus Lind working on finalizing an Indy light seat. There are several stories like this of drivers who don't have a full-time Indy light seat. And Parker Thompson's one of them that comes up in here too. And it's kind of surprising to see that we have two very fast drivers on the outside looking in of a 12 car field right now. I know that I thought I heard rumors that Exclusive may be running one car. I'm not 100% sure yet. We're hoping to get some more information here in the next couple of weeks, though.
Exclusive running an Indy Lights car?
Yeah.
I do feel like I have heard rumblings about
that. Yeah, I've heard rumblings about that. So we'll see what happens, but I can tell you this. Next week's show is going to be a busy show. We've got Josh Green coming on with us. He's the second half of the USF 2000 Turn 3 Motorsports entry. We'll also have a wrap-up of the SCCA Super, Hoosier Super Tour races at the Buttonwill Raceway. One of our supporters, Brian Belansky of RacingWire.info, will be joining us. He's actually there right now shooting pictures and tell us all about the Open Wheel Series. Also, we will have a wrap-up of the Texas round of the Coca-Cola Kokomo Indy Elite Series race, which you can catch later on to Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sim.TV. So for Rob Bradman and our driver analyst Charlie Ante, I'm Jeremy Scott. We'll see you next week here on Inside Open Wheel. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.